Good afternoon, everyone. Today is the 26th of April. This is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. And I want to apologize for our late start. If you're wondering why we're getting started about 15 minutes late, or if you're just listening to us online, I'll tell you that the House had an extended discussion on the floor and only adjourned about 5 minutes after one. So we apologize for keeping everybody waiting. We do have a relatively short agenda today, which is probably some relief to the House members who are still thinking about lunch. But we're going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 5039. Again, I want to recognize that we've got an awful lot of veterans in the room today, and I want to thank all of you for your service as well as for your attendance here today on behalf of all of the Oregon veterans. I know you're interested in how these discussions are going to evolve. So, Ms. Beidle, when we left off yesterday, I believe we had completed most of the presentation from the department, and we're about to move into the appendices.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. Department of Veterans Affairs is here for the second day of their Phase 2 presentation, and as you mentioned, they are close to the end. Under today's meeting date, you will find presentation materials for today, which also includes some additional information on the Veterans Advisory Committee members, which was requested by the subcommittee yesterday.
Excellent. Director Smith, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and we should be able to keep this short and sweet today. We'll do a recap overall of all of the policy option packages before you and recap a little and insert to those some of the answers to some of the questions that bubbled up from yesterday. Overarching, one of the central decisions for this committee and the legislature at large is that mix of the general fund and lottery fund. Today, about $10 million of general fund for Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, half of which flows down to the county. Now, with that opportunity for and keeping that with the strong voice of veterans advocacy for current services and advocating for the $18.5 million of Measure 96 lottery funds for above and beyond efforts. One other thing that we had not touched on that's an important part of these new opportunity out of the lottery funds, another consistent message both from the veterans community, from us as an agency, our partners, the governor's office, to think through how do we want to structure these funds in terms of how they flow. From the executive side, and I think also from the legislative side, we're going to want to see visibility and accountability for these dollars. It's a significant investment. They aren't solely dollars for ODVA, but we believe it would be powerful to structure that Veteran Services Support Fund to be managed by ODVA, and still with that clear direction from the legislature, whether it was directing those funds passed through to veteran services, passed through to housing efforts, passed through through other grant opportunities. Certainly not solely our expertise to deliver on these programs for veterans, but that we could be held accountable both by the governor, our partners, veterans, and the legislature, if it is a fund that's set up at DAS or some other entity and with direct appropriations out of that fund, we will have to continue to be slicing and dicing to go get the accountability on those results for the Measure 96 dollars. So that's an important consideration as we go forward. And then as we touched on yesterday, really wanting to use this historic opportunity with these new resources to align funding for current programs such as the home loan program to make sure we're not that those programs are sustainable well into the future, to leverage new investments in the proven models, both on veteran services and other partnerships, specifically on the housing side, and then to still call out separate and distinct that we want to have a reserves, not necessarily simply for that ups and downs of the lottery funds to make sure that we're not overpromising in the short term and making sure that the investments we do make out of Measure 96 are sustainable in the long term. So I will quickly go through the overarching policy option packages. One of the ones that we did not touch on yesterday but has been a top priority for the department is that investment in 21st century IT systems, both for the IT portion and the business processes that those will give us. It was a $600,000 ask on the conservatorship program system and a $250,000 ask on the home loan system. And these are truly our green screens, I-Series, COBOL language. It has served us incredibly well over the last 20 years. The biggest, and it would still continue relatively well to deliver on the program through the current through that technology. But the outdated nature of it has made maintaining it simply from being able to hire the staff that has that COBOL language expertise is a challenge. We continue to see that as Department of Revenue and Department of Corrections move off of I-Series systems. We're going to be doing the same, both to correct an ongoing for those two key programs, but also to make sure we're really we're cutting through the data silos, even at a small agency like ODVA. POP 102 that we had talked about quite in depth yesterday, and all of these numbers are still the original governor's budget numbers with the now buyback or advocacy to buy back the rest of the general fund up to $10 million. This would be a key area for further investments. About $1.5 million surge to veteran services passed through both to counties and national service organizations. And as we discussed, that could be a key area for a significant surge. Upwards of $5 million would still be very well within reason and a significant and transformational investment. If we were making that level of doubling the funding of that pass-through, it would be a historic level of new eyes and ears and advocates out there across the state. And one of the issues that Co-Chair Johnson raised yesterday, and we'll continue both to present back to the co-chairs and all of you, the formula, I kind of talked myself around yesterday on what was the formula for the distribution of those funds, but 55% is allocated on a base allocation and then 45% weighted by the population demographics of where veterans are living across Oregon. And that 55% on base does help shore up in those more rural communities and in the mid-sized counties to ensure that there is a base advocacy across the state. But we will run some numbers of what it looks like to have a formula at a 50-50 at that 55-45 allocation and an even greater level of allocation to base, 60% versus 40%. And we'll run those across the different levels of investments so that you can actually see where are these dollars going to be going county by county and to make sure that we are matching the intent of the legislature of where those dollars should go. And Co-Chair Johnson, as you were coming in, we were talking about the formula for pass-through to county VSO dollars. It is 55% base allocation across all counties, 45% to the weighted by population. But to potentially match this appropriation with a budget note to get that clear guidance from the legislature would be hugely helpful. So we'll continue to present on those options going forward for your consideration.
Thank you. Colleagues, I apologize. And just to warn you ahead of time, momentarily those doors are going to open and a gaggle of fifth graders are going to spill into this building. And I think that it probably is excellent to have these young people see the men and women who have worn the uniform of our country here talking to legislators. So I just warn you ahead of time, these are rambunctious but polite fifth graders that are going to pour in here in a second. We passed a bill today, Mr. Director, that I continue to worry about the number of bills that we're passing out. This one I had the opportunity to speak to the carrier, Colonel Senator Boquist, and it had to do with directing the Director of Veterans Affairs to provide statewide expertise, advocacy, coordination, and assistance to veterans to assist veterans in navigating federal, state, and local health care and mental health care systems for the purpose of obtaining health care and mental health care. What concerns me is the proliferation of bills that we are passing that may or may not make your work more difficult. When I queried Senator Boquist about this, He said that it was actually just providing legislative direction for work that CVSOs are already doing. But at some point, I think on behalf of the committee, I'm inviting you to say, we're getting a lot of bills that I don't know who's coordinating all these bills, and I don't know if you have your government affairs people watching to make sure that we're not duplicative or confounding the work of your agency.
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, so that was introduced at the request of ODVA through the governor's office.
And it's a fine piece of public policy, and there should be no questions. I'm damn glad I voted yes.
But it did raise questions on the Senate side in those initial hearings. You know, when we're talking about healthcare navigation of veterans, it is work that is currently embedded in our mission and our advocacy. But when we think of our veteran service officers, largely they are mobilizing and advocating on behalf of those claims back to the Veterans Benefit Administration. And we have found it to be much more challenging to truly get the level of healthcare navigation out of that same network of VSOs. And while we did not feel we needed statutory authority, this gives clear guidance that this should be part of our mission going forward. We did not embed a fiscal on it because we believe as we continue to augment that local network of VSOs across the state, we're going to continue to find opportunity to free up capacity at the statewide level. And this is a mission where we really view the VSOs as those advocates in the corner at the local level on those disability claims. When you think about the healthcare navigation, it's primarily healthcare navigation back through the federal VA medical center system, where we're feeding in through the Portland VA, the Roseburg, Walla Walla, as well as Boise Medical Center. Longer term, we could, I think just even getting one of our current statewide folks to be a link at Portland, a lot of it is relationships across those medical centers to make sure these, where it's almost an ombudsman patient advocacy role. Just like we are co-located at the Benefits Administration, we think we could have a co-located model with the federal VA longer term.
That'd be great.
But an area that we want to grow statewide, it doesn't... There are still VSOs at the local level that are able to advocate, but it's a more challenging remote back to those major medical centers.
Thank you. I'm just going to go check on my fifth graders.
The last portion of POP 102, so you had the significant surge investments to the county VSOs and those national service organization partners. The alignment of the sustainability for the home loan program going forward, and a few statewide investments on aging veteran services outreach and a key representative payee position as a professional fiduciary. And just to get onto the record, one other question was whether our conservators and fiduciaries are bonded. Both for our program and the Public Guardian program, they are exempt from the bonds, but that is typically something that is out in this field and in this profession. Policy option package 103 we did not touch on is an other funded one, primarily around Dodd-Frank compliance out of our home loan program to make sure we have a quality assurance position to comply with federal mortgage laws. That is the one position. The significant cost there in the rest of this policy option package is on a refresh of our Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs headquarters. Not simply for our team, but also to make sure we can continue to generate revenue off the tenants that are occupying our facility. Policy option package 104 was the partnerships opportunity, both around mental health, student veterans, and housing efforts. One of the questions that came up yesterday was whether there was opportunities not just on new build of affordable housing projects, but whether it could be acquisition and renovation of existing housing stock. From both the advocate community and the Oregon Housing and Community Services team, sounds like there is that current flexibility within the general housing account that it could be used either for new developments or purchases of existing housing stock. So we will begin to see that piloted out of current RFPs and NOFAs to come this summer out of existing funds, and an opportunity for us to double down on those housing efforts out of Measure 96 dollars. I would just also highlight in revenue I believe it's House Bill 3357. We had talked about how these original funding streams were generated off the recording fee, and Representative Meek was highlighting that there's also an opportunity under consideration and as part of the larger revenue packages to come, an opportunity whether we wanted to raise that recording fee, both, so there is a 25% dedication in that current recording fee statute to veterans' efforts on homelessness prevention, homeowner assistance, and affordable housing efforts. That would, if that passes, that will essentially double our opportunity to better take care of veterans' housing issues and would relieve some of the pressure for us to make as much of a direct investment out of Measure 96 resources. So depending on how those two play out, still a great opportunity for us to expand our efforts to make sure that every veteran is housed across Oregon. Policy Option Package 105 for our two veterans' homes, one in the Dalles, will be coming up on its 20th anniversary, undergoing a larger renovation project, both that has a cost share of the federal VA at 65% and out of our operating revenues, a 35% local match, and also for the Lebanon Veterans Home. The two projects, one on the Dalles, really focused on the retention, recruitment and retention of our nursing staff and aides, to make sure that we have a facility to be able to actually have classroom space for them to be able to do the classrooms or the training within. We've also leveraged partnerships with the community college in the Gorge to make sure that we have well-trained staff. The project in Lebanon, while built out in 2014, has been a huge success, both from the veterans' perspective and family perspective of residents in that facility, but also as a hub in the community. And we have already quickly outgrown the 140-odd parking spaces there, both with volunteers coming in, family members visiting, as well as staff. We have the space on land behind the veterans' home, but it would build out the parking lot further. So those will be in front of Capital Construction Committee for consideration, a little under $2.5 million. They will still be projects that we have to do if they aren't funded through Capital Construction. They would just take much more time as we accumulate the operating revenue to be able to take care of those in future biennia.
Two questions. Question number one is, especially with respect to the two veterans' homes, and you pointed out the 20-year age on the one in the Dalles, I visited that facility, and I have to say what a tidy, clean, attractive facility it is. What is your deferred maintenance plan for both of those facilities? And the reason that I ask is that in another committee that I serve on, we just had a presentation from the Department of Administrative Services that is the, you know, the mothership for all state properties. We've spent $4 million in 4 years explaining the fact that we don't take care of our portfolio of physical properties. They are falling apart. And I think that before we can responsibly go out to Oregonians and ask them to continue to invest in physical properties and capital construction, that we need to demonstrate that we're taking care of what we've got now. And I would like to know what kind of deferred maintenance schedule you have for those two fine facilities that need a heightened level of care, given that they house, in some cases, medically fragile people. So that's question number one. Question number two is, you're going to Cap Construction to look for a parking lot and some other capital needs. I'm curious what the veteran community's reaction would be to paying for any of those capital improvements out of the new money. They clearly benefit veterans. There is a nexus to a veterans facility. And the reason that I pose that question is that the requests of Cap Construction exceed the available resources. Stuff is going to get left behind. And so my question, and you don't need to answer, but it is a rhetorical question, perhaps more properly directed to the veterans sitting behind you, what the reaction would be to use new lottery resources to help discharge some of those capital construction requirements.
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, I think we have been fortunate that we have had the operating revenue generally to meet our local state share of maintenance costs. Candidly, I think we've been behind the large refresh and renovation that we're going to be undergoing over this next year, year and a half, up on the Dalles. It will renovate the kitchen facilities, the common areas, and the individual rooms. I think we could have done it a little sooner, and I think it's now timely. And then on the ongoing basis, as residents and veterans move out of the veterans home, to make sure that we're bringing that daily maintenance or that more regular upkeep. But generally, we have had, this has been a very financially sustainable program, both out of federal VA supports, out of the state operating revenues. Generally, we've been able to cover most of that maintenance out of existing revenues. These are a few specific and targeted asks for capital construction. It has certainly not been on the lists of the broader veterans community in terms of those great investments at a limited $96. Often those are really trying to get more more directly into the hands of serving veterans. It certainly meets the criteria. It just hasn't been on the broader list.
I just want to just share to perhaps tell you what our dilemma is. There is a perception in some places, and it's an appropriate perception, that veterans services and veterans writ large are getting this huge boost from the lottery money. And is it appropriate to have that money serve veterans rather than coming in and looking at the limited resources that exist within capital construction? Because there are very worthy projects in the hunt in capital construction, and our request list far exceeds the ability of the state to respond. So I just offer that for general consideration.
And Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, I would also highlight that it would be a one-time cost. So essentially that capacity would be bought back for future consideration of where those resources could go. It wouldn't have to be an ongoing, where some of these efforts, once we've created a larger pass-through to veteran services, we're going to want to continue that in future biennia. That would be more of a one-time cost that could be a surge.
Well, it also, a parking lot is an appropriate use for bonded debt. So. Okay, please continue.
And I would just highlight at the national level, while we've seen a lot of proposed cuts to federal agencies, the federal VA has largely, their discretionary funds has had a proposed 6% bump in the president's proposed budget. But on the construction grants that we fund for those deferred maintenance and maintenance of the veterans' homes, they've had about a $200 million a year share that the federal VA has contributed. When you think of the veterans' homes that have been built out across the nation from the Civil War, from the East Coast, from the Civil War on, there are a lot of facilities in dire need of maintenance. Most of those dollars are going into life safety and renovations, not necessarily the construction of new homes. But we are going to continue to advocate back to the federal VA to increase that pool of construction grants, primarily around renovations, so that we never get into the dire straits on our facilities. Any questions on the overarching policy option packages?
And then colleagues, questions? Representative Meek.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just a quick question. I remember bringing this up maybe in the Veterans Committee, but the initial funds for the building of like the facility in Medford was used to build it and develop it. And then I believe that there are funds coming in monthly on a monthly basis that would go towards maintenance of the property. Is that correct? Am I understanding?
Co-chairs, Representative Meek, in terms of the housing grants, so I believe projects that were developed both in Medford and Cave Falls, the ongoing operations run by agencies at the local level often matched up with rental assistance funds, like a HUD-VASH voucher or other rental assistance funds, whether at the state or federal level. But from the maintenance, I don't believe there's any maintenance funds flowing from the Oregon Housing and Community Services as much. I'd have to research what the maintenance, how they are looking at doing their maintenance longer term.
Okay.
I don't believe that's part of those current funds. It's more on the initial build, and they have to, as part of their projections, what's their ongoing operation model going forward?
Follow-up, Coach.
Follow-up.
Yeah, I guess my understanding was that the funds coming in from the HUD-VASH vouchers on a monthly basis, that some of those funds would help operate the community, continuing continuous operation, but then also there should be a reserve account for future or even current maintenance. Is that how that works?
Co-chairs, Representative Meek, it would certainly be something, if we were operating it, we would want that to make sure that it's sustainable longer term. But I just can't speak to the whether it's specifically. But I can get some answers.
Okay.
We had also had questions come up around our advisory committee. So House Bill 2891 would position our advisory committee more in a grant-making role. And this has been a beloved part of our department since our founding. And I think something that many state agencies, some of our state agencies have governing boards over them. Some of them do not have advisory committees, but it has been hugely value added for our team to truly connect us to the veterans community across the state. Historically, was much more dependent. Positions on the advisory committee used to be hinged back to national service organizations, where the VFW or American Legion would specifically have a seat. We certainly still have a great share of our national service organization leaders on the committee. But have also worked hard to truly diversify it across the range of veterans. Always the geographic equity is important to us, the broad cross eras of service, and then the expertise that we're looking for across both as connections to veterans and the issues that they face for their health, education, and economic opportunity. They are four-year appointments made by the governor. They are not Senate confirmed, a four-year term. Eligible for reappointments for second four-year terms. And many, we've recently had a significant surge of new appointments over the last 4 years. These are our three executive committee members, Dennis Guthrie as chair, who was here yesterday, Vietnam veteran, former state commander of VFW, and representing from Redmond, Oregon. Tony Garcia is a deputy general counsel at City of Portland, Oregon Army National Guard, served with the 41st Brigade on their largest deployment in Iraq in 2009. Kim Douthat, U.S. Coast Guard, a former county veteran service officer, former employee of ODVA before she had gone to VSO work, and then also now the PCC veteran, student veteran liaison and coordinator for PCC. John Howard, representing U.S. Navy, he had been a longtime constituent services representative for Congressman Walden, hailing from Medford, Oregon. Rosie Macias, Salem Vet Center, a link on the federal VA opportunities, a United States Marine, and representing out of Salem, as well as a lot of nonprofit experience serving our veterans at home and other veterans efforts here in the Mid-Atlantic. Mike Jones hails from Ontario, a Vietnam veteran, American Legion, former state commander, and also a Vietnam veteran. Val Free was a relatively most recent appointment, is the director of the Housing Authority in Washington County, also a Vietnam veteran and Air Force. John Mangus is my predecessor by two. Served roughly from 1983 to 2003 as director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and also had Air Force and Army National Guard experience. And then Ren Lino, a fellow Marine, Vietnam veteran, and current tribal chair of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. So a good diversity, a great board, but I would just raise, and we truly, and when you read the statutes for the foundational statutes, both how the department and the director are supposed to use the advisory committee for advice and counsel on our current programs and where we need to head in the future, but also that they have blanket opportunity to review and advise and give counsel both to us and other decision makers. I think certainly an appropriate role, some of the legislation coming over has asked them to review different pieces of legislation. We meet with them quarterly. It is a key part of our effort. The House Bill 2389 would give them a more formal role, both in rulemaking and governing and actual decision-making authority over our grants. And that is a different model than we've seen for any of our other ones, but certainly one to consider.
I think it's one of enormous importance. And a million years ago, I was very heavily involved in the charitable sector and helped found Grantmakers of Oregon and Southwest Washington, which is the unified group of grantmakers, whether they're corporate, they're charitable foundations, and it's now a very robust organization. But there are tremendous fiduciary responsibilities involved with making grant recommendations or grants themselves. And I don't know whether or not you have thought ahead of what formal training your folks ought to have to avoid personal liability. There, it's a whole different world when you're responsible for giving away public money. And the scrutiny on this board will be intense, and there will be questions about the rigor and the competency of the training that people who heretofore have not been involved in the grant-making world make. There are new forms that have to be filed, new reporting. So I just don't know what planning you have done to both prepare your current seated advisory committee members as well as to anticipate recruiting future folks when they know what the level of responsibility is that they're going to undertake.
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, so it certainly has not been worked to date until we get a clearer signal out of the legislature, but I would agree it is easy to cut checks from a foundation or grant-making opportunity, but it is hard to ensure that they are, I think even just from the outcome side, where we have seen opportunity, where we have had successful grant programs, whether the VSOs, the National Service Organizations, some of the ones that we've proposed with structures and outlines for student veteran coordinators, the opportunity on grants through established entities. What makes me a little concerned is the breadth of the opportunity. This is a veterans population, 326,000 across the state, with outcomes across all the different policy areas. It would be hard for any one committee, no matter who they are, to have the expertise in all of those areas, from mental health to housing, to reintegration of service members coming home, to serving incarcerated veterans coming out. The aging issues, it would be very challenging, I think, to drive. It may be an opportunity to pilot opportunities, but it would be hard to do on a cohesive basis.
You might even want to look at having an advised fund at the Oregon Community Foundation, where your advisory committee serves in an advisory role in the actual application of funds, but all of the other stewardship responsibilities and grant follow-through and all of the other, I don't know how big this program eventually gets, but OCF has the investment capability to steward the funds to help your advisory committee avoid self-dealing, even accidental self-dealing. Because I'm certainly not suggesting anybody would do that intentionally, but, you know, they end up giving a grant to a VFW that they're the chair of. That's self-dealing. So it might be something you'd want to look into.
The other potential, so it currently makes the in this bill makes the decision-making the advisory committee. If there is an interest in trying to have a small pilot grant-making effort, could certainly restructure it where it is the department that could be held accountable with that advice and counsel still. I mean, all the proposals that we've proposed have been vetted through the advisory committee and often with our other national service organizations. It would be a different model to make sure that we were still having the accountability both from the legislature and governor on what was actually being funded to make sure that it doesn't run afoul from the intent of the legislature for these funds.
Representative Meek.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I have to excuse myself. I'm going to be running to Hearing Room A to speak on the bill that Director Smith spoke about. And any of the veterans that want to come down to Hearing Room A, I want to steal them if I can.
Okay, you're excused. Follow on, gentlemen.
March on.
Thank you.
Nothing like coming into a hearing loaded for bear. All right, Mr. Director, please continue.
So, co-chairs, members of the committee, we're at a wrap-up point. If there's not other questions, one of the other questions that had come up yesterday regarding the payments on kind of a quarterly basis down to the county VSOs, we followed up with Clatsop County, that is an individual contractor, and it was true when he was first coming on and taking on that contract for the county and not receiving that first payment until that quarterly. He had to end up taking a second job as he was entrepreneurial applying for this contract, but not with that resource of a community action network or another nonprofit partner. And there was a lot of questions of why is the VSO have to get a second job. Now that those quarterly payments have begun and are going, a much more smoother process. But to your questions, Senator Johnson, on how do we equalize that service across the state, much of that will come down to the formula. In thinking about, we're never going to mandate from the state level a specific salary and benefit that every county has to match. We see those differentials, whether it's sheriffs or public health employees, and certainly on VSOs. Often it's our state VSOs that are getting poached to better paying county jobs. We've had relatively consistency, but in looking at the funding formula, we'll give those options and present those options transparently back of how these dollars could flow so that the legislature can weigh in on that. And I think important, the other thing I kept thinking about out of yesterday's hearing, do we want to put more strings attached to these dollars that are going down through the county VSO pass-through grants? And I think we often see that conversation where we're not delivering results necessarily on graduation rates through K through 12. The state's a major funder. In having that local flexibility, there is broad discretion for those county VSOs and those local county partners to decide how to best use those funds. It has been working and getting us the results that we're looking for. So whether it was, we're not as inclined to break out the funding streams to separately on training or separately on outreach, but a transformational surge of investment down to the county VSO level with the appropriate formula would be a historic opportunity for Oregon veterans out of Measure 96.
I like your nomenclature. Transformational surge, I like that. Colleagues, any questions of the director? Yes, sir. Representative Noble.
Thank you, Senator. Just a comment and to express my appreciation for everything you do to support the people that we're indebted to. And I think we've already talked about my goals for funding. And I know that it's not certain, and I want to encourage you to keep rallying to do that, or at least the veterans that we owe so much to. The Representative Evans, when he testified, made some good comments and referred to yesterday. But as I shared with you, my wife has also found in working with people who are homebound, she can have two veterans in one day in the same community. One is being served well, and one doesn't know how to get connected. Mm-hmm. And it's tragic because there is a complete difference. And Representative Evans made a comment, and I think has been shared, that there are veterans who, one, either don't want to get connected or don't know what resources are there, or that believe that it's better off used for someone else. And I think there's a huge educational component. So I will continue to do my part to, as we discussed, encouraged fully funding the general fund from past what it's been in the past, and then fully fund the lottery dollars as the voters, demanded in November.
Thank you.
Colleagues, any other questions or comments? Mr. Director, thank you for a very concise and understandable presentation. And Ms. Bidle, you got anything for the good of the order?
I do not.
Mr. Co-Chair?
No, ma'am.
That being the case, we're adjourned. Thank you all for attending. For attending.